There's a lot of debate today in the educational and professional world. Educational costs versus value. A few years ago, a group of lawyers who had graduated from their various law schools actually took their universities, their alma maters, to court, claiming that they had misrepresented their degree. You see, they'd graduated and they weren't able to find a job. And the graduation to professional career percentages had been exaggerated. And they felt that they had been cheated. Many students have gotten or are in the midst of getting degrees, but they're not getting an education. Many are getting a bachelor's or a master's degree, but not a marketable vocation. Now, I'm going to tell a joke. I'm going to tell you it's a joke ahead of time so that you realize it, but it makes a point. Universities brought together their alumni from the medical world, the biological world, engineers, and then the general liberal arts. And they brought the alumni together and they said, we want you to tell us what is the big question that they are asking you in your field of your professional career. Well, the medical people said the main biggest question we're asked is, when are we going to be able to, through research, find the advances to be able to change the human genome in order to solve the problem of cancer? Everybody went, oh, wow, that's a great question. The biologists, they said, well, the biggest question that we're facing is just the whole study of the DNA chain and how we're getting on the edge of being able to change people's DNA so as to solve the problem of generational diseases that are so genetically tied to our predisposition. Everybody went, wow. The engineer, they said, well, the biggest question that we're facing in our professional career is, how will artificial intelligence bring safety and security to our world? Everybody went, wow. And then they asked the general liberal arts graduate, and they said, in your careers, what is the biggest question that people are asking you? And the liberal arts people said, well, do you want to supersize that burger and taco order? Today, we are finding that people are getting a degree, but they're not getting an education. They're not getting any kind of career. Now, prosperity and poverty. People think that money is the solution to all of their problems. But the fact of the matter is, the truth is that the love of money is the source of most all of their problems. People are very dissatisfied with life, and somehow they think that if they but have a little bit more, they will solve all of their problems and they'll be happy. And unfortunately, what happens is the person climbs to the top of the ladder of success and they look out and they are looking and peering into a world of nothingness. There's no satisfaction. There's no value. Neither Proverbs nor the Bible teach what has today become a very popular and well-marketed theology called health, wealth, and prosperity theology. This is a false gospel and theology perpetuated by media charlatans. The only people who are getting rich is they themselves. by manipulating people through the people's suffering or needs or hurts in order to give to them so that God might relieve their suffering or needs and prosper them. Like politicians, you know that these media charlatans are lying whenever their lips are moving. They do not tell the truth. Now, what does Proverbs teach? Proverbs teaches us how to avoid poverty. It does not promise prosperity as marketed by these media charlatans. There is no health, wealth, and prosperity as a guarantee from God. The guarantee is, I will never leave you, nor will I ever forsake you, and I will provide your needs. What does Proverbs say about wisdom? Wisdom about wealth. Proverbs 23, 4 and 5 says, do not weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from all of your consideration. And the word consideration has the emphasis on a fixation upon it. Cease from your consideration or fixation of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings. Like an eagle, it flies towards the heavens. Wealth is a fleeting possession. Prosperity and poverty. This morning, I'd like to pull from the book of Proverbs 7 principles to help us avoid poverty. Proverbs does not promise you financial prosperity, but it does have a lot of principles to tell you how to avoid poverty. And these principles are given to us so that we can incorporate good, solid lifestyle behaviors in order to have our needs met and in order to be a blessing to other people. The first one is, people who are unteachable will find themselves in poverty. Proverbs 13 and verse 18. Poverty and shame come to him who neglects. The word neglect means to avoid or even to reject discipline. Now, let's not think of discipline here as something corporal. It has to do with training. There can be positive training and negative training. There is positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement. Poverty and shame will come to him who neglects discipline. This is a promise from God. Promise from God's word. If you're unteachable, you're going to find yourself in poverty. But he who regards reproof, correction, instruction will be honored. The word honored has to do with, it's a word which means to be a heavyweight, to have a place of influence and significance. And one of the things that we have to do in life is to be teachable. Now, I remember as a young apprentice plumber, I had entered into my apprenticeship, and my father happened to be one of the major instructors in the Plumbers Union, Plumbers Local 98, they're still around. And in that, he was one of the major teachers of the code and the practices and all of those things. And so when I entered into my apprenticeship, and of course, I went into my apprenticeship because I didn't want to go to college. I didn't exactly like studies at that time in my life. I went into my apprenticeship because I didn't want to go to Vietnam. I didn't like the jungles. I went into my apprenticeship because I just wanted to make money and live happily ever after. But when I entered into my apprenticeship, because my dad was one of the head teachers, I felt so much pressure to not make a mistake. And I'll tell you, I was an obnoxious, probably still am, unteachable young man. And finally, one day, a very gracious and good journeyman grabbed me by the neck, and he said, "John, if you're not making a mistake every day, you're not working. You, John, have to learn from your mistakes." And you know, mistakes are all right. Mistakes, failure, they are the back door to success. I tell my students all the time, I don't care if you get it right or you get it wrong. I care that you know why you got it right or why you got it wrong. Failure can be the back door to success. But if we're unteachable, if we're filled with pride and arrogance instead of humble and open, we're not going to move forward in careers. We're not going to learn. And we need to create a mindset of humility that, you know, just teach me. If I make a mistake, just teach me. Train me. Poverty and shame will come to him who neglects, avoids, or rejects discipline or training. And I find this just quite interesting. I've coached baseball, I've coached basketball, I've coached swimming. Rarely ever have I had someone come up to me and say, "I'm not going to do that. You're wrong." No, they are very teachable. And yet when it comes to things about life, about lifestyle characteristics, about our behavior, and particularly if it comes from our parents, oh, we just get riled up and we are unteachable. He who regards reproof will be honored. Remember, if you want to avoid poverty, be teachable, be humble, be open to instruction. Point two, stinginess. Proverbs 11:24 says, "There is one who scatters, has a life of generosity, and yet increases all the more." There are people who know how to give, who know how to invest, who know how to scatter in order to gather. And there is one who withholds what is justly due and yet results only in want or in poverty. If we want to be wealthy in life, we cannot be stingy about our resources. We can't be stingy about the things that we have or the things that we do. We need to be generous, investing in the lives of others, and that will come back. What we reap, we will sow. But we don't do it for the reaping, we do it for the glory of God. But you have to be a generous person in life. You have to be a person who gives, who helps others, because then in life, when you have the need, or there is something that you need a team to come alongside and help you accomplish, others will be there. In several basic and what we would call unsophisticated cultures throughout Africa, throughout Central and South America, in their culture, the wealthiest person is not the one who has the most, but the one who is owed the most. And if we want to avoid poverty, we need to have open hands, generous hands, hands that give, and give not just our finances, but our learning, our resources, our time, investing in other people. Stingy people who try to hold on to it all are going to find themselves in poverty. The third principle is idle conversation. People who engage in idle conversation, who don't get around to making a decision or following through on a plan of action. Proverbs 14:23 says this, "In all labor there is profit, there is benefit, but mere talk leads only to poverty." How do we avoid poverty? We become active, engaging, self-motivated, energetic people. We don't sit back like couch potatoes and just talk about what we're going to do. When we're at work, we don't just sit around and talk, or today text and all of those kinds of things and play on our iPhones or whatever. We need to be productive with our time. We need to be productive with our labor. I have a friend of mine who's has a business, has had it for a long time, and has a half a dozen or so employees. Recently, he had to rearrange all of their desks. Now, I'm not talking about a middle school class. I'm not talking about a high school class. I'm not talking about an elementary class, you know, where you have students who don't know. These are adults in a career. And he had to take and rearrange their desks so that they would do their work instead of goofing around, sitting around, talking to each other, playing games on their computers with each other, grabbing their cell phones and looking at all the latest social media or whatever. In all of labor, there is profit, there is benefit, but you have to invest your time, you have to invest your energy. But if you're a person who simply sits around and talks and boasts and blatherates about what you might want to do or what you think you're going to do, or get up off the couch and get going. Get to doing it. God can move a moving object. But if we are just sitting around and talking about work or talking about careers or talking about things and we don't get up and make a decision and get going, it's not going to happen. Idle conversation, idle thoughts, vain imaginations, all of these things will lead to poverty. The fourth one, a person who has poor or lack of planning. Proverbs 21:5 says, "The plans of the diligent lead surely to advantage, but everyone who is hasty," the hasty word means to be impulsive, "comes surely to poverty." If we want to avoid poverty, then we need to be strategic thinkers. We need to be strategic prayer warriors. We cannot be caught up by our impulses. But we have to look at life, we have to look at the timeline, and we have to plan out 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years, our goals. We have to prayerfully think about where we'd like to go, where God would like to take us. We need to think about those things. We need to then break that strategic plan down into measurable and consumable components. And then we need to take them to the Lord prayerfully. And we need to have that spiritual strategic plan and then execute that plan as we seek God's help. As in the book of James, there was the guy who said, "Well, I'm going to go here and I'm going to go there and I'm going to go everywhere on these business trips and I'm going to make some deals and I'm going to make some money and I'm going to do some things." And James says to him, "Wait a minute. Don't you understand that life is like a breath, a vapor that passes away? What you need to do is you need to say, 'If the Lord will.'" You need to bring the Lord into that strategic plan and develop it, measure it, execute it, and modify it periodically as you need to. Strategic planning is so important for life. And it's all right to make changes in that strategic plan along the way. If you're not making changes, then you're not reevaluating. But the plans of the diligent will lead surely to an advantage. You'll be prepared, you'll have options. But everyone who is hasty, this kind of impulsive lifestyle, impulsive decisions, impulsive purchases, I say it with apology and I say it with some pride. I'm Scotch. We Scotch people, we love a deal. The buying of something or the doing of something is the hunt. It is the adventure. And we need to be strategic about our choices in life. We need to be planning about the things that we're going to do. And if we're diligent, if we're thoughtful, if we're prayerful, and we don't allow ourselves to impulsively do things, over time we will make wonderful decisions. We will allow the Lord to guide and direct us as we incorporate prayer and spiritual food and guidance and the listening to the counsel of others. And through that, we will have great advantage. But if a person is an impulsive decision maker, an impulsive buyer, an impulsive actor, they're not thinking through it. They're not looking down the road. They're not seeing the precedent. They're not seeing the implications or the complications. And they will surely come to poverty. Proverbs 28:19, he who tills his land will have plenty of food. But he who follows empty pursuits, this word is used of daydreaming, will have poverty in plenty. To avoid poverty, you have to be ready to work hard. You have to be ready to work smart. You want to work smarter, not harder, but you want to work harder as you strategically plan. And if you do, then you will have the opportunity to reap from your labor. You will have the opportunity to be blessed, and with that, you can bless others. But the people who are just daydreamers, and daydreamers are people who sit around and dream about what they want rather than what they can do. They're just not realistic. And if a realistic person comes along and says to them, are you sure? You really think that's true? You think that's attainable? They feel like the person's attacking them. Really, the person's loving them, trying to say to them, wake up. What you're thinking is the great exception to the rule. You're daydreaming. You're not strategically planning. Proverbs 14:4, where no oxen are, the manger is clean, or the barn. But much revenue comes by the strength of the ox. You know, you can't be afraid of getting dirty with work. You can't be afraid of the smell of the barn. So often today, and I think it's a generational thing that is going on. I'm, you know, the World War II generation, post-generation, and then you got the Generation Xers, then you got the Millennials, and then you've got this last group that they're trying to figure out and label. And they don't have a good label for them yet, or what I would call a complimentary label. But it seems like the willingness to just take a starter job and to get going in a career and to learn something and to be trained in something is just like not good enough anymore. I received an application from a gentleman a while ago for Manthano Christian College, and he was wanting to be the accountant. And in this resume that he sent. He had some, you know, nice credentials, a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, had done some accounting, and a little bit like 5 years of experience. But in his resume, he put down what he expected to earn. And he expected to earn over $100,000 a year. He expected to have 4 weeks of vacation a year. He expected to have full dental benefits, medical benefits, and optical benefits. And he expected to have a simple 40-hour a week job. And I looked at that and I said to myself, if Manthano had that job, I'd apply for it. But how unrealistic. And we're finding in our culture today, particularly as the economy has picked up, that we have a whole generation that don't want to work. They don't want to get into the oxen's manger. They don't want to get in and sweat. They don't want to get in and smell the poop. They don't want to get dirty. And that's going to lead to poverty. And I'm concerned about that. You know why? Because those are the Social Security donors or givers who are going to be supporting me in a few years. And I need them to be robust. I need them to have good jobs to pour that money into Social Security so that I'll be all right for whatever days the Lord has for me to come. You're going to end up in poverty if you're not willing to start at the bottom and work your way up. Or if you're not willing to take a job that is hard work and smells. And you have to start somewhere. The worst job I ever had in my life taught me a very, very significant lesson. I got a job at McDonald's. I got a job as the burger flipper. You know, I think I was maybe 19 at the time. Burger flipper. And I was caught in between jobs. My dad used to always say to me, John, don't give up one job until you have another. While you're climbing the ladder, always hold on to one rung while you reach for the other. And I only did this for about 4 or 5 weeks. But I'm telling you, flipping hundreds and hundreds of burgers every hour, the grease spattering up, catching my arms, you know, giving me a face mask. That taught me, you know what? I'm going to go back to college. Or I'm going to go to an apprenticeship. Or I'm going to get a skill set that is marketable, that I enjoy doing. And that's not to deride anybody who works in the fast food industry or whatever. It's to say this. If you want to go forward, you have to move along with the jobs. You got to be willing to start at the bottom, and you need to work your way up. And if you're not willing to work your way up and to show competency and diligence and faithfulness at a simple job, then don't expect anybody to promote you. And don't expect anybody to give you anything in this particular world. It's just not going to happen. We need to be willing to roll up our sleeves, to get down in the smelly dirt or whatever it is, to start at the bottom and to work our way up. And if we will do that, we may not end up at the top, but we will not be at the bottom. We will not find ourselves in poverty. You see, the great majority of poverty is self-inflicted. Self-inflicted by bad behavior, by bad lifestyle, by bad choices. Where no oxen are, the manger is clean. Wonderful, but there's no profit either. Proverbs 14:4, where no oxen are, the manger is clean. If you want to be clean, just be ready to be poor. Point five, addictions. If you want to avoid poverty, you have to avoid addictions. Proverbs 23:19 says, "Listen, my son, and be wise, and direct your heart in the way. Do not be with heavy drinkers of wine or with gluttonous eaters of meat. For the heavy drinker and the glutton will go to poverty, and the drowsiness will clothe one with rags." People who get caught up in addictions, and the ones that were common in the days of Solomon or the writing of the Proverbs was wine, alcohol, and then food. But today, there's many other addictions. The addictions of pornography and sexual self-aggrandizement. The addiction of the internet. The addiction of social media. The addiction of all the FaceTime and Facebook and Twitter. And I can't even name them all. I've chosen at my point in life to avoid those, as they might be interesting, but for me personally, they're much a waste of time. But a person who gets involved in addictions, it could be gambling or whatever, the New Testament tells us nothing is to control and dominate us except the Lord Jesus Christ, to whom we are to be brought into the image of his likeness. And people will waste a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of energy on addictions. And these addictions will lead them to poverty. It takes their time, their soul, their spirit, their money, their resources, and they are thrown away instead of invested in other people and themselves for the future. Six, excessive expenses. Now, I thought about titling this Extravagant Lifestyles, but you see, none of us, including myself, would be willing to say, I have an extravagant lifestyle, because there's already somebody more extravagant than me by which I measure myself. So I've called it excessive expenses. Proverbs 21:17 says this, "He who loves pleasure," that is really translated to party. The one who just loves to party, who loves the excitement of life, who loves to do anything but work, will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil, and wine and oil here in ancient Near Eastern culture represented the anointing that one would have when you were prepared to go to a party or whatever. You would take the olive oil, even grosser, the women would take the pee of goats and slick back their hair and everything. Can't imagine it, but the anointing, and then perfumes from the oil and the wine, they would make perfumes, and then cosmetics, they would make cosmetics. He who loves wine and oil, partying, perfumes, cosmetics, will not become rich. And of course, back then, you know, the oil you got was pretty plentiful. You just got it from the olive tree, and the goats, they were pretty available. They weren't the great expense that we have today. Billion-dollar business. Now, I have three wonderful daughters, my wife, so I spent much of my life with women. My son was the oldest. And I'll tell you, I don't mean this to be mean, but I'm so thankful to be a man. I mean, it adds like an hour or more to my day, every day. And nobody cares what I look like, per se. And my heart goes out to you ladies. This culture has bombarded us with this false image of what real beauty is. But apart from that, Proverbs says, these kinds of excessive expenses. But you know, in our culture today, excessive expenses can be many things. It can be how much we spend on food, as in going out. It can be how much we spend on clothing, whether it has to be you know, a certain brand. It can be how much we spend on recreation or entertainment. We blow a lot of money that never comes back to us. We spend a lot of money that never has any kind of investment value. And the one who loves to spend on pleasure, to party, will become a poor man. The one who loves wine and oil will not become rich. Now, here again, I think I can thank my parents for this. My dad has been gone for 30 years or more, but my mom's 96 now and still doing well. But I can thank them that when they raised us, they taught us how to save. They taught us the hunt of the bargain and things like that. And so my wife and I, Diana, we have had that kind of pattern throughout our lives. And when we went on vacations, we couldn't go, you know, into hotels and things like that. But we would go camping. We've been fortunate enough to be in all 50 states with our children. Well, 49 of the 50 with our children. And many other places. And we would camp, and we would camp on the ground, and that was our choice. But one of the things that we did so often was we would have peanut butter sandwiches. And that drove my kids crazy as youngsters. They would call it the peanut butter and jelly vacations. Now, this is just an example for us. But, you know, nowadays, they're buying houses. They went through an education. And I say to them, you know, kids, I want you to look back on those peanut butter vacations, and I want you to thank the Lord for them, because those peanut butter vacations allowed us to put a little bit of money away in savings and to be able to help you guys today. You see, the point here is not peanut butter vacations, but it's the way you spend your money. What kind of a lifestyle is it? It's not to say we can't go out to restaurants, it can't have a good meal, can't go to a hotel or a motel. But if you're taking so much of your resources and you are just wasting them on pleasure, wasting them on the satisfactions and fulfillments of the temporary part of this life, you're going to end up being poor. And chances are you're going to have very little to pass on to the next generation, your family, your children, at strategic times. Number 7, no work ethic at all. This is so strategic. And it's unfortunate that you have to learn a work ethic when you're in elementary school. You have to have it developed when you're in middle school. And you have to begin to grow it in high school. And you do that by, when you're in elementary school, your parents give you chores. And you're rewarded for those chores. In middle school, you begin to take on projects. Maybe you become a little entrepreneurial. Maybe you do something very cutting edge and dangerous today, like a lemonade stand, and you get in trouble with local authorities. In high school, you get yourself a part-time job. And in college, that's the development of the work ethic. And yet today, we're seeing more and more generationally that work ethic is going away. And there's a mindset that, hey, you owe me something. You owe me something. Proverbs 6:6 says, "Go to the ant, O sluggard, O lazy person. Observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief or officer or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provisions in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, Your poverty will come like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man. The word armed man means a man who has a shield. And so the need will come upon you in such a way that you will not be able to stop it. Proverbs 24:10, I passed by the field of the sluggard and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense. And behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles, and its stone walls were broken down. When I saw, I reflected upon it. I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then your poverty will come as a robber, and your want, the needs, like an armed man. Young people, listen to your parents when they tell you that you need to do some work. Develop a work ethic early. This youngest generation now has the highest percentage of quote-unquote unemployment. Not because they can't get jobs, but they don't want jobs. They're not going to do jobs. And parents don't fight that fight with them. And parents, you're just setting your children up for poverty. We are now, as you know, in a global world. And in that global world, we are going to all be fighting for jobs. And you've got to be energetic. You've got to have a work ethic. You've got to be willing to do what is necessary within the principles of godly lifestyle to be able to work and benefit. And you need to take on those challenges. Yet today, we just have these sluggards, lazy people for whom there are so many jobs that are beneath them or who really don't want to work. Now that the economy has picked up, and I hope you understand that has picked up, there's just millions of jobs that no one wants to take. They think they're not good enough for them. We're reaping the benefits of a society that has become lazy, prideful, and not willing to get dirty and work in the oxen's manger. If you haven't developed a work ethic yet, find somebody to mentor you. You've got to get over that. If you're not willing to work hard and work well, you will find yourself in poverty. Two applications in closing. The first application is a prayer that we should have. And this is found in Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 7. This proverb is by Agur. The majority of the rest was written by Solomon. And Proverbs is a wonderful book because Solomon says to us, you know, this is a collection. This is a collection of sayings and thoughts. And I want you to read through them, and I want you to collect them, and I want you to sort them, and I want you to put them into different packages, and I want you to think about the themes. But this Proverbs chapter 30 by Agur, he starts out in the first two verses, and he declares how stupid he is. Lord, I'm a stupid man. I'm a stupid man who doesn't know a lot. And I want to be taught by you. I want you to teach me. I want you to relieve the pain of my ignorance by teaching me. And then in verses 7 and following, he says, two things I ask of you, O God. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep deception and lies far from me. Now, notice he doesn't say, keep me from being a liar, but keep me from being deceived. Keep deception and lies far from me. he's saying, help me to have a realistic worldview. Help me to understand things as they really are. Don't let me get deceived by the messages that are out there or the false worldviews. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is my portion. Feed me with that which you know I can handle. That I not be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? What the heck? I can take care of myself. I've got everything I need. I'm rich. I'm wealthy. I don't need the Lord. Who's the Lord? That I not be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or that I not be in want and I start stealing and profane the name of my God. Agur is saying, I don't want to deny you, and I don't want to disgrace you. I don't want to shun you, and I don't want to shame you. Lord, you know who I am. You give me the food that is my portion. You give me what I need. That is a marvelous prayer to bring spiritual success and satisfaction to life. Now we'll go to the New Testament, a passage that has been misunderstood. This is the Apostle Paul writing. The Apostle Paul, prior as Saul, was a very wealthy man from a very wealthy family. Had everything that he wanted and needed and was very, very successful. Read the earlier verses in the book of Philippians, of his pedigree. But at the end of the book, he's thanking the Philippian church for their gifts to him. And he says this, but I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned before, but you lacked opportunity. Now, I do not speak from want. Paul says, I don't speak because I need it or I have a great want. He says, for I have learned to be content. Now, that is the word that we need to understand better. Because when I think of contentment, I think I'm in my lazy boy. I got the chair up. I got the remotes in my hand, and I'm ready to just chill. This particular word, content, it only used a couple times in the New Testament, but outside the New Testament, it's a word which means to be self-sufficient. Paul says, I have learned to be self-sufficient in whatever circumstances I am in. Now, you say, what are you talking about, John? Self-sufficient? You know, we're not supposed to be self-sufficient. We're supposed to be depending on the Lord. Yeah, well, Paul's going to get to that at the bottom. You see? I can do all things through him who strengthens me. But so often I've come to people who have been in need for various reasons, a job or whatever, and they've said, I'm just trusting the Lord. I'm just going to wait upon him to bring me a job. I'm just going to wait upon him to solve this problem. I'm just going to be content. No. You got the wrong idea. You got the wrong translation. Paul says, I've learned to be self-sufficient in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means. I know how to be poor, he says, or to get by with very little. More challenging, I also know how to live in prosperity. Because the prosperity is the greater challenge of not wasting that money on the parties or the self-satisfaction or those types of things. And in any and every circumstances, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. See, this is the practice. The practice is a dependency on the Lord God to guide and direct you while you take all of your energy, your skills, and your abilities, and you put them to work, trusting that the Lord is going to guide and direct you. And don't sit back and think that God's going to do something if you're not going to participate. Now, there's examples where that happens, maybe, but that's the exception to the rule. It's not the rule of life. Whatsoever your hand finds to do, do it mightily as unto the Lord. Proverbs does not promise you health, wealth, and prosperity. What it gives you is principles to avoid poverty. Take those principles, grab that prayer, oh Lord, just give me what is mine, give me what I can handle, that I do not deny you or I do not dishonor you. And Lord, and in life, I'm going to take all of the strength and all of the abilities that you've given me. I'm going to be teachable, I'm going to be trainable, and I am going to let you energize me for your honor and glory.